Evans, he's a graduate of University of Manchester, a PhD in mental handicap, and he's directed a research project on curriculum development for children with learning difficulties for the Department of Education and Science in the UK, and he became head of Department of Child Development and Educational Psychology at the Institute of Education in the University of London. He's worked with OECD in Paris, where until his recent retirement, he was a senior analyst with responsibility for the work carried out on children at risk and those with special education needs. First in the Center for Educational Research and Innovation, and subsequently in the Education and Training Policy Division. He has published some 20 books. Published some 20 books and many articles and chapters, and has traveled extensively studying special education systems in both OECD and non-OECD countries. I said about publishing books because that is a crux, you know, in academics. So we have a place to turn to review some of people's books. Peter Evans, please welcome.
Great. So like the other speakers, I'd like to thank the organisers of this conference for inviting me to Montreal. I'm going to be able to stay for a few days, so that'll give me the chance to see your beautiful city, and I'm looking forward to that at the weekend. It is the weekend, actually, tomorrow. I was asked to talk about upper secondary education, tertiary education, and equity and transition between the two for students with disabilities. So I'm going to focus on this, and actually it was quite a challenge doing this paper because I felt I had to think rather afresh about how one might do this. But coming from a policy organisation, I thought that we ought to start with some ideas of what main policy themes should really be in this field. And before I do that, I just want to start off with some caveats, like Albert. First, if you're working in an international agency, one's expected to do comparable data between different countries. And in this particular field, one of the first problems is that there's no agreed international usage of terms like disability or the preferred educational term, which is really special educational needs. So if you look at how the term special educational needs is actually used in OECD countries, it includes those students who have clear or organic disabilities, blind, the deaf, the mentally handicapped, and so on, those who have learning difficulties, which are children-like, but I think you call them specific learning disabilities in this country, children with dyslexia, that sort of thing. In calendar, in fact, you also include the gifted and talented in this category, and that applies to other countries also. And this category could also, in some countries, include the socially disadvantaged. So you can see that this is quite a challenge to deal with this question if you take the kind of the educationally preferred terminology here. So when we started working on these comparable databases some years ago, the OECD countries agreed to make a broad distinction between some of these children in order to be able to make international comparisons. And this is actually quite important, as you'll see as we work through the paper. Firstly, we use the term disabilities to mean children with clear organic etiologies. This, in a way, relates to the classic category, medical categories of disability. And then the term learning difficulties covers behavior problems and learning disabilities. Now, the important thing about this is that it is really rather unclear what the etiology of these problems is. And certainly it's something to do with an interaction between the child and the school. And this is the main reason why they have difficulties in accessing the curriculum. So children with disabilities, the adjustments have to be made because of their organic problems to help them address access the curriculum. And for children with learning difficulties, the problem is something slightly different from that, which emerges in the course of their education. If you're talking about the transition from upper secondary education to tertiary education, then you run into another problem, and that is that the terminological systems are not the same for these two age groups. Those in education have a particular set of definitions, a particular set of criteria. When you move out of the childhood domain into the adult domain, which you would have in tertiary education, then you tend to have definitions which come from the Ministry of Health or the Ministry of Social Affairs or something like that. So there are different definitions about, and obviously that makes comparisons from upper secondary to tertiary education even more difficult, and it's added to the other problems that exist there. So when I was thinking about this, it struck me that these issues are the ones which are the principal policy themes which relate to equity issues for this particular group. Many of these themes have been identified during the course of the discussions we've had over the last day and a half, and they are physical access. Clearly you've got to be able to access the facility, you've got to be able to access the curriculum, there's a concern about resource distribution, and issues about outcomes. There are issues about policy coherence, which are important, and there's issues about gender. And if we look at the chart that I've drawn up here, I tried to indicate where in OECD countries one could have some confidence that some of these issues have been appropriately addressed. And you'll see that outside of physical access, where you've got probably good physical access in lower secondary education, because, as Albert said, in OECD countries this is compulsory, but this is certainly not universal in every school in every country. Upper secondary education, I think it's the same, and tertiary education, it's partial. So basically you've got partial physical access, and by this level you could say, well, maybe there's an equity issue there. Now, curriculum access is an interesting one, because I don't really think that this has been addressed adequately in any of these levels of education. Certainly there's been some attempts to modify curriculum to meet the needs of students with disabilities, but you only have to look at the data for where these children are educated to see that many of them in many countries are still in special schools, where they may follow slightly different curricula, which gives them different sorts of educational experiences from non-disabled students. The resource distribution question is an extremely important one, and you can say, I think in lower secondary, this probably can be said to be universally covered, since these students nearly all get additional resources to help them access the curriculum. This is quite important from the point of view of, for example, Rawls' social justice principle of difference, that resources ought to be differentially applied to students according to their needs. That's an input variable, and that's, I think, it's an important start. But there again, resource distribution for students in upper secondary and tertiary, it's much less clear whether that's the case than it is in lower secondary. Outcomes. We have no data at all, hardly, on outcomes of these students from the point of view of international comparisons. I think this is an area where there's a huge need for extra work. Policy coherence is an important issue, and for most countries there's not really any policy coherence dealing with these. That I mean policy between education, health, social services, for example, in supporting these children in transition and in tertiary education, and gender, which we'll talk about a bit more in a minute. Now, I tried to put together what data we actually could on this, and this is an indication, I think, again, of some of the difficulties. Like Albert was saying, we have huge holes in the database. And but you can see that in all of the countries on this particular chart, with the exception of the United States and the United Kingdom, there's a big reduction in students with disabilities in upper secondary education in comparison to lower secondary education, which is the light blue lines. If we look at the number of students in higher education, and we only have two data points on this, both the USA and the UK, they're actually higher than in upper secondary. And I think the reason for this is partly to do with the definitional points that I made earlier, that these are students counted as disabled within the context of the Ministry of Health or a health set of definitions, and they're not the same population exactly as the ones who are in school. So clearly there's a lot of work that needs to be done to sort this out rather more fully. But it gives you an idea, I think, of the way in which in some countries these children just don't make progress into upper secondary education. That's obviously not an equitable arrangement, and clearly has a big impact on their future possibilities. So, again, if you look at, as I said, really, students with disability accessing higher education, they vary very substantially from country to country. We've done a few kind of case study type surveys here because the data in higher education is just not available. But you can see that in the UK, the numbers have gone up from 4.6 to 6.5% between 2002 and 2007. In Germany, up from 12.5% to 18.9%, 2003 to 2006. France, 0.3% to 0.4% between 2001 and 2006. And the United States, between 5.6% to 11.3% between 87 and 2003. And again, I mean, these reflect differences in the kind of students who are accessing higher education. So in the UK, the big growth has been in those with dyslexia. This has been a huge increase in Britain. In Germany, the numbers are mainly due to health problems, and this includes children with asthma, with various types of rashes, with back pain, with heart complaints, those sorts of allergies, those sorts of problems. And in France, the numbers are low, mainly because these are students with physical and sensory disabilities. So you can see that this is a very patchy picture. Now, there are many more boys than girls, as we've heard, with special educational needs. And in the OECD countries, we have a chart here for those students with disabilities. And you can see that in a whole range of countries, there are more boys than girls who are identified as having disabilities. The ratio is round about 60 to 40, and it's reasonably consistent across countries. And I think this raises a very interesting equity type of question. I mean, people here have said, well, you know, this is inequitable for girls because they're not getting resources that boys are, and maybe some of their needs are being unmet. On the other hand, and I say this with some nervousness because we're surrounded by paediatricians here, it's well known that boys are more fragile than girls in terms of their health development. And so the question is this a reflection of a fair distribution of resources to boys who need it because they have more fragilities, or is it some kind of inequitable distribution towards girls? If we look at children with difficulties, you remember these are children with dyslexia behaviour problems, the differences are even larger. You know, they're very much, and there's a big statistically significant difference between these two groups. So the same question applies, is this equitable or not? I don't know the answer to that question. If you can answer it, then I should be very pleased to have that. Okay, to move on to some transition issues. When young people are moving from upper secondary education to university, tertiary education, they have to face new expectations, they have to become autonomous. And this is a particular challenge, obviously, for people with disabilities. They have to start looking after themselves, they have a completely different regime, which often they've not really been able to experience in their school years. There's the question of the changing definitions of disability between education and health, And the World Health Organization, I think, would like us to believe that the International Classification of Functioning, the ICF, is potentially a solution to this problem. I think that's certainly worth considering, since it does provide a potential framework which would go across the different ministries, and that would clearly help on the data understanding side. On the other hand, the ICF is a very complex sort of descriptive classification regime, and I don't know how easy it will be to use in schools. And I know for a fact that the Americans have said that there's no way they're using the ICF in their school system. So although some countries think this is a solution, others are not so clear. There are children in transition get different supports between different ministries. This can be a threat to their progress towards tertiary education. Deaf students, for example, get support in schools, and then they need to have people to sign for them when they're in higher education. That needs funding, and sometimes the funding doesn't arrive on time, so that hampers their ability to access the curriculum in higher education. There's issues about physical access to universities. Frequently, they're just not accessible to people with disabilities. And the UK, who's made major policy developments in this area, has requested both higher education and employers to modify premises so that people with disabilities can access them. The UK has also developed a job brokerage network plus counselling, which helps to give students with disabilities experience in the transition years of the workplace, which is helpful for their access to course selection, etc., in higher education. There are issues about disclosure. In many countries, you have to disclose that you're disabled in order to get government support. However, people with disabilities often feel that this is bad news because it stigmatizes them, and that will give them a differential experience. There are barriers between further education and higher education. Many children who are not so academic go into further education or community colleges, and then they want to make a transition sometimes from there to higher education. This is not always so easy. Norway is trying to break down these barriers. The United States is trying to encourage cooperation between community colleges and higher education. And France has some new initiatives to try to promote collaboration between special and... Okay, so I'll move on to some conclusions. I think this is an area which needs a great deal more work in order to understand equity and develop equitable systems. I think, as I said, the data side is really important. As it is at the moment, you wouldn't really know whether a system is equitable or not. There's no way you can do a cost-effectiveness analysis trying to relate the cost inputs to the outcome responses because we just don't have the data to do that. Clearly, access to both the curriculum and premises is still an issue. Policy analysis inhibited because the data are so weak. We've got the policy coherence issues between ministries, which remains a serious question, and support during the transition period is uneven. And we have the gender disparities as a question of whether this is an equitable use of resources or not. Thank you very much.